Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Over the decades, many have strongly criticized Western-driven globalization. Who would have thought someone like Trump would smash it with one thunderbolt? Also, back to the drawing board, ending the Ukraine conflict. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest. In Istanbul, we have Tariq Cyril Amar. He is a historian and political commentator. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick this off with Mark here in Moscow. Well, Trump did it. He's been a well-known critic of globalization, at least in his own mind, how he defines it. But this gambit of returning to tariffs, which is a long American tradition, he's done it on steroids. Is this the end of globalization as we understand it? Is it going to work? And how is the world essentially going to react? That's three questions. I'll give you as much time as you want.
Yeah, so this is certainly a radical global economic revolution or a dissent acted by Trump. Essentially, the structures of neoliberal globalization created by the United States over decades, going back to Bretton Woods, Trump has concurred with what a lot of people have concluded over the last few decades. Capital flows moving from the West to the East in sorts of cheap labor. Industry and manufacturing have left the United States, and globalization is no longer good for the United States, free trade. So Trump is abandoning it with a return to a tariffs-heavy system, which was last perpetrated by the late 19th century U.S. president that Donald Trump has a big fixation for, William McKinley, which he regards as the golden era of the United States. He's attempting at one fell swoop by executive fiat, not going through Congress, to reset the rules of the global economy in the U.S. as still the world's single biggest consumer favor. If you want access to U.S. consumers, you got to pay the price, and those money will go into the government coffers.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tariq, I mean, before the income tax in 1913, it was the government funded itself through tariffs. The history, we've got the history right, but the conditions are different. Tariq, I mean, the United States did this to protect its own industrialization. As Mark has rightfully pointed out, globalization, as we understand it in our time, has deindustrialized the United States. So we're looking at very different conditions. I mean, in principle, I'm not against tariffs, but I'm for tariffs that protect like the steel industry or your toaster industry and things like that. This is something very, very different. Tariq.
You know, I think the question of deindustrialization and maybe reindustrialization is key here. And I totally agree with Mark that at least this is an attempt to make an economic revolution in the global economic order. And one of the big aims for Trump and his followers doesn't only seem to be, but clearly is to reindustrialize the United States, to restore its industry and manufacturing base. Now, I believe they will fail. This won't work, right? It's a very retrograde, nostalgic idea. And although I can understand where it's coming from, I think in this case, the sort of Schumpeterian approach, right, to the current United States is not going to work. The other thing that I feel is very interesting about this is that they're hurting themselves more than anybody else in the end. They will hurt everybody, that's very clear. The disruption will affect everybody. It's affected stock markets everywhere, but stock markets are not everything either. But on the other hand, they are actually imparting a very strong impulse to essentially the whole globe to finally detach itself from the anomalous position of the United States, right? The famous
idea. And the dollar.
And the dollar, indeed. So they're really working towards multipolarity, the economic side of multipolarity. That's what they're working towards. And what's interesting is that countries like China and Russia Russia is a very interesting case because of Western economic warfare over the last years have had a head start. They have already developed models how to react to this kind of massive disturbance coming out of the center of the West itself. I'm going to make one last point because it fascinates me as a historian. I find this a little bit reminiscent of what happened in the very late Soviet Union between 89 and say 91, the end of 91. Where you got a discourse in the Russian core suddenly saying, and Yeltsin was very strong on that, we, the Russians, have suffered the most. Our empire has not been good for us, right? We have given too much to the others, right? And in a way, this is parallel, right? The United States have run an empire. And they are now turning against it and saying, this is exactly what Trump is doing. We have been exploited by it, right? Let's look after our own. So you can also read this, I think, as indicating another stage in American imperial decline.
Well, you know, Mark, if the goal is to reindustrialize, there's something called a timeline here. I mean, this is something you can't just do, wish it. I mean, essentially, you know, we wish to be reindustrialized. This is a long, since the Soviet Union has been brought, this was like a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of pain in between. And a lot of those are Trump voters, Mark.
Oh, details. You want all these plans and preparations. We just need to snap and make a new deal, right? And that's it. It'll take 10 or 15 years for American manufacturing to and foreign companies setting up shop in the United States then to protect themselves from these tariffs. And the American consumers will perhaps be the biggest sufferers for that time period. But, you know, details, schmittels, right? Trump isn't concerned with that, right? He's got a grand vision, and he's already talking a third term, or at the very least, J.D. Vance. So he thinks that he can, pass the buck onto others, blame China, blame everyone else for the suffering that is had. Unfortunately, it's likely to lead to a global recession. We may have already been heading towards a global recession, but this certainly isn't going to help things. It's probably going to speed up and exacerbate that. And, you know, countries are reacting in different ways. China is immediately retorting with the equivalent tariffs of 34% back on the U.S., the Europeans are others are immediately trying to curry favor and crawl and beg for exemptions. And others like Russia are just kind of standing tall and yawning because, they don't have much trade with the United States. Well, I mean, eventually they'll be affected by oil prices lowering, but they have a much higher immune system, as has been pointed out by Tariq, to this sort of thing. And what we may see out of it is that BRICS Plus may emerge as a champion to carry on the standard of globalization and free trade in spite and despite the United States withdrawing from it.
Yes, minus the dominance of one currency, which is the key to Western American domination. Tariq, I mean, this sounds like the 19th century has been brought up here. This sounds very 19th century. I mean, Trump is interested in Greenland and Panama, maybe taking over Canada. I mean, this is kind of Fortress America. It's against global cooperation, and it's for imperial assertion.
Yes. And in a way, again, I know this sounds strange, but this is good for the world, actually, because what America achieved, especially after World War II, is integrated into the world as a whole, at least into the West, which dominated.
Well, it's global institutions,
that the world came to depend on it. And if America now becomes much more egotistical in an open way, right, in this very brutal, rude, Trumpist way, that's actually useful. Because think about it like this. Have you seen European elites, for example, or Canadian elites made the slightest move to emancipate themselves from America before this happened? No, it's only happening since Trump has been going in a different direction in foreign policy, especially with regard to Russia, and since he has now added the tariff strike, which is a strike at the international economic system as it is. So the Americans are now forcing the others to grow up again. That's actually a good thing.
Well, Mark, is this, are we returning to geopolitics, not the rules-based order, which I hope is a term that will be forever banned, but are we going back to spheres of influence, for example?
Yeah, I think Tariq is exactly right. The EU foreign policy political elites, they believe...
What's that?
US, they believe in U.S. foreign, U.S.-led Western global hegemony far more than the current U.S. administration. They're compliant vassals looking for their master to return to form, and they'll hope they can wait out the United States. Globalization was already... I think, you know, I mean, at the end, and geopolitics, right, a sphere of influence-based great powers, it was already reasserting itself. I think this is Trump reacting to that more than him reverting the world to that, right? He is recognizing a flaw. The question is his cure, is his solution the right one? I don't think it is. And I don't think a Trump, he's not looking for a useful place for the U.S. in a multipolar world order. He's trying to retrench and say the Western Hemisphere is our imperial fiat and you know, bring up the barricades. That's not, of course, a good solution for the world, and it's going to lead to, you know, conflicts that Trump is already engaging in, despite attempts to portray himself as a peacemaker.
You know, Teddy, I think very often we think of globalization as purely a Western invention, but with Trump's path, I think that, you know, we'll have a much more multipolar world where, like, the BRICS countries can have their own kind of mini globalization.
Yeah. I don't think it's necessarily mini, to be honest. Look, what we are saying...
Good point. It could be much bigger. Yeah.
When we're using the term globalization, what we're really saying is a very specific way of integrating the world that has favored massively the West and in particular the United States. It's something that has been going on for a relatively short time in history. But if you think of integrating the world on a large scale, that's been happening for at least hundreds of years. And what we might be entering, what we are entering, I think, is a different sort of integration. And if you took the term globalization and detached it from its current ideological meaning, then of course that's another form of globalization. The problem is just we associate globalization with
that was my point, and you your answer was far better than my question. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Here, we're discussing some real news. Mark, let's turn our attention to Ukraine. Not a lot of good news coming out there. I mean, I see everybody trying to talk it up, but when I see Marco Rubio talking to NATO allies, as they like to call them, I see him just slipping back into his neocon rhetoric and mentality, which is not in line with what we've heard from Donald Trump and Witkoff and others here. Where do we stand right now? Because it seems to me the embers have cooled.
Yeah, I think we're right where we predicted we would be several months ago, right? Yeah. There is no chance for a real ceasefire because no one other than the United States really appears to be interested in one. And there's no chance of a peace settlement because while...
Okay, let me stop you right there because you've said two very important different things.
Yes.
The Russians want a peace settlement to get a ceasefire. What Trump's people think, you need a ceasefire to get a peace settlement. Is that correct, Mark?
That is correct. And of course, they're demanding, they're saying there can't be any real diplomacy towards a settlement until there is a ceasefire. Well, history flies in the face of that, right?
That's right.
Trump was negotiating with the Taliban before the shameful U.S. withdrawal under Biden. Likewise with the Vietnam War, the Korean War, right? You know, that's actually, ceasefires are very difficult to arrange in conditions of war. Russia has tried to point that out. And Russia doesn't need a ceasefire, what's more. And the Trump administration is coming to the realization that Russia does indeed have all the leverage and they don't have the ability to force a ceasefire. Trump doesn't like Zelensky. He has contempt for him. He doesn't really much care about Ukraine, but he's still the U.S. president and he can't just walk away and he can't agree to Russia's terms, which puts us right back where we expected we would be. Russia and the U.S. want to improve bilateral relations on a separate track, but the question is that sustainable if there is no political settlement in Ukraine?
Well, then I'll throw that question to Tariq. Is that sustainable? Because that's what I've been arguing all along. I mean, obviously, the United States and Russia would like to have better relations. Certainly, the Russian side does. But it can't be at the cost of surrendering. And I think there's just too many people in the Trump administration think, oh, improving relations will solve everything. That's not, they're not paying attention and they're not listening. Tariq.
Ready. Put it like this, I have a slightly different take because, look, it's relative. If you compare them with their predecessors, they're paying much more attention and they're listening more than the Biden people. And the Russians acknowledge this, and I don't think that they're just doing this to be kind and polite, right? So there is a different type of dialogue, but I agree with all the points you've raised as to its limits. Now, here back to the question you've mentioned, which is, could they possibly have, as it were, an overall detente, right, the normalization they're talking about, while the Ukraine war doesn't end but is ongoing? Now, I think that is actually possible. It's a small path, but it's possible. It's possible if the United States gets out of the Ukraine war. Now, there you have to talk about whether they stay in it indirectly through the Europeans or not. It would have to truly get out of the Ukraine war and abandon this end of war and maybe leave it to the Ukrainians, to the Europeans alone. But let me get this back to basics. Here's the underlying problem. The underlying problem isn't even ceasefire or peace. The underlying problem is that Russia is winning the war. And what the Americans have to make up their mind about is how to deal with that. They're still in denial. They think they can treat with Russia as if Russia needs a compromise in between. But what they really need to negotiate with Russia is the terms of Russia winning the war. Now, there's some sort of wiggle room there, but of course, it's an entirely different game.
Well, maybe rephrasing it, Mark, how to rationalize Ukraine losing the war. They'll never say Russia won. They'll say the Ukraine. Well, we've seen this in the New York Times. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Go ahead, Murr. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was just a piece in the New York Times this week, The Secret History of the Ukrainian War.
Not so secret for us.
Yeah. Very limited new information, right? It was repackaging. It was an attempt to salvage the reputation of the Biden administration, to present the U.S. generals as providing brilliant plans that dictated everything from the strategic down to the operational and tactical level, right? Even semantic. The U.S. weapons were the best on the battlefield. It was just those Ukrainians that couldn't follow orders and couldn't use the weapons, right? We already see this is the blame game has already begun, right? And it's not even being done by the administration. It's being done by the interlocutors of the previous administration, effectively in the New York Times. But I mean, Trump, his whole shtick, this peace through strength, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to be very hard for him to walk away from this. First of all, there's a huge division within the United States on this issue, right? Even within the Republican Party and even within his own administration, the neocons are starting to step out. And we had word this week that they're telling him not to speak to Putin, not to have a phone call with Putin again until, the U.S. demands for a ceasefire on U.S. terms are met, which is not going to be met, quite obvious.
You know, Tariq, that New York Times article, that's the secret history, which wasn't so secret. I have a theory of the case here. I think that obviously this was timed to put pressure on the Trump administration and to absolve the Biden administration, which will historically be impossible to do in the long run. But I think what they want to do is they want to anchor a narrative in which to judge how the conflict has been fought and will come to an end, because I personally think a whole lot more is going to come out, and that will, instead of having our interpretation that we've steadfastly stayed with for the entire duration of the conflict, that New York Times piece will be the baseline, which means they're covering somebody's lower back end still. Yeah. Go ahead, Eddie.
I think that's absolutely true. What you said, also what Mark said, it's basically a stab in the back legend. And it's perverse because it says that the Ukrainians stabbed the US in the back, right? It's completely insane. So once again, if you read it from the point of view of what happens to American puppets, it couldn't be more brutal, right? In the end, you also get blamed. And I think you're right about this idea that they're trying to provide the first draft of history. You know, that famous ambition to sort of set the narrative. But they won't succeed because it's a very weak piece. It's a very weak argument. Nobody is convinced who has been following this war intelligently. You know, this is not working. This is not the Pentagon Papers, try as they might, right? And even those have been superseded. So I think that you are right that Mark is right, that Trump will find it very hard to get away from this idea of peace through strength. How do you sell Russia in effect winning, even if you don't call it that, when you have said you are so strong and you're going to force everybody, right? The fact is he can't force Russia at all to nothing, and they would have to finally accept that. However, I would make one point, which is we really don't know yet. It goes up and down. Look, you could even interpret the recent Laura Loomer scandal as pointing toward a certain weakening of neocon elements, right? We don't know yet. I think Rubio said one thing recently to the Europeans that is interesting. He said, we will know within weeks. And deep interpret this to say that this is on the ropes. But maybe it's more logical to interpret it as saying we are at a tipping point. And I'm not yet sure where it's going to tip. We might be surprised either way.
Well, again, this is in the West, the whole Ukraine project coming out of the West has been a narrative endeavor, okay? And unfortunately, facts on the ground get in the way. And this is what the Marco Rubios of the world are so frustrated with here. I don't see that there's a tipping point. What's going to happen is they're going to find a new narrative to explain their relative weakness and lack of ideas. Mark?
Yeah, there's just a piece out in the British press in the last week, again, trying to say how great the failed and now defeated Kursk incursion was because it changed the narrative, right? Yeah. And I'm like, well, maybe if you guys had been fighting the real war instead of the narrative war, you might be in a different situation. But that's part of your problem. I mean, you've been, you know, dueling each other in the sphere of the English language media and social media. Meanwhile, Russia's been winning on the battlefield, but also diplomatically and economically. And there is what is not being reported on very well is Putin's envoy, his equivalent of Witkoff, Kirill Dmitriev, the head of the Russian Direct Investment Fund. He went to Washington this week, had meetings with Witkoff in the White House, and he went on Western media on TV afterwards. And he was questioned about sanctions. And I think that's one of the big things that this Trump administration was hoping on, that the promise of removing sanctions would get Russia to make concessions from their terms. And Kirill shattered that. He said, no, we like sanctions. The sanctions have built up our economy.
Well, I hope you don't mind me saying, Mark and I have known each other for a very long time. And when the sanctions were deployed, we were that happiest campers in town. Yeah. Because you know why, everyone? Because, well, we need to diversify and we need investment. And you know what? The West did it for them. They did. They had to do everything now. They didn't have to think about it. They didn't have to worry about this group of business people and the importers and the exporters, always that big argument. Well, it was all settled for all of us. Finish up, Mark.
Yeah. So that first of all, it indicates how little leverage the U.S. has in this situation. It also set the terms for the debate going forward, both on the terms of the Ukraine settlement and also, I think, Russia's position within the trade and economic wars that are just starting. And Russia looks like a unassailable pillar standing against all the prevailing winds in both concerns.
You know, well, gentlemen, the situation we have in here is we're in pause, but I think the next time all three of us appear, maybe the needle will move one way or another. But I doubt it, not until late summer or something like that. Gentlemen, I want to thank my guests here in Istanbul and in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.